G'day, welcome to SEO Success Stories. My name is Russ McCumber, and every 2 weeks we talk search engine optimization with the world's leading SEO practitioners. We interview a mix of in-house SEO leads from the world's biggest brands and SEO thought leaders, many from leading search technology brands, plus the world's foremost SEO educators. They'll all be lifting the hood on their own SEO journey, as well as sharing the tips and tricks behind how the best and brightest minds in SEO go about their trade of dominating the SERP. SEO nerds, this one's for you. Hello and welcome to another episode of SEO Success Stories. My name is Russ McCumber. We're here in your ears every 2 weeks. On today's call, we've got Matt Harrison of NextNet Media. G'day, Matt. How are you?
Doing really, really well. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. We're going to go deep into Matt's career history and some of the cool things he's doing with NextNet Media, a few brands which most SEOs listening to this will have heard of. So we'll get into that. Now, if you are enjoying what you've heard in this 20 seconds, or if you've heard this before and you think, oh, that's right, I really should be listening to this more often, make sure you hit that subscribe button. We are on here every 2 weeks with the world's leading SEO minds, practitioners, thought leaders, etc. So please do that. And if you enjoy it, obviously we're always up for your positive feedback in a review. Apple reviews is the main place where we're trying to build those. But we do have Matt here, and I'm going to ask him the one question that I ask everyone that joins this specific podcast. Matt, what do you feel is the biggest challenge facing SEOs in 2024?
Yeah, so first off, I want to say thank you for inviting me on. I mean, it's going to be a great conversation. I'm already excited. What I would say the number one biggest challenge that SEOs face right now is company alignment about how to tackle their SEO challenges. I think all too often we look at everything as being this huge sea of problems that we have to tackle all together. We're forgetting that we should be tackling it one by one and then tracking and testing and seeing how well each and every one of those things does. We all know from SEO on the whole, there are a million different ideas and a million different ways of tackling a problem. But if you spend too much time trying to do all of it, you're not going to do any single one of them very well.
I think getting that focus on what the priority is now, getting alignment of a team, of an organization, of a whole company behind that, whether that's the board or whether that's whoever that happens to be. We talk about that a lot on this show, about the importance of soft skills, stakeholder management, all the reporting and everything that goes into that, the influences that don't show up on the org chart, that, oh, that person's actually got a lot of influence here. So I think that's a really good call out. All right, but let's talk about, your history, how you got to where you are today. So we're going to get to NextNet Media, but tell me first, what was your first ever, did you come from the marketing side or the tech side? What was your entry into this world?
More tech side than anything else. I came into NextNet Media about 10 years ago. I actually came on to work within the web hosting division of our business.
Yep.
And so I spent so much time learning cPanel, Linux, server-side, DNS. I mean, I could talk about DNS for like days upon days, which is the most boring topic on the planet. But that's how I came into it. It really was tackling what are the sort of those big tech challenges with SEO, and then going through all of the different algorithm updates and how it influences how things operate on the tech side, and then how that influences me today and how I give advice to people about how to tackle some of the challenges they have.
So when did you study? What did you study, and what sort of years are we talking about, that sort of entry into the tech side?
Yeah, so my background is actually in English literature. I just happen to be somebody who can take anything apart and put it back together. So it just always interests me. I put Linux on every single computer I had starting in like 98. When I came in about 10 years ago into this ecosystem, it was, I think 2013 is probably when I really first started, putzing around in this space, just figuring out how to build things really, really quickly and easily, fixing things for people. I worked with a number of different agencies down in Sarasota, Florida area. And they were building websites in Joomla and WordPress, the early days. And I was just helping out fixing some of those issues right from the get-go. So banners not working, how do I get the banners to serve better? Cutting up different media so it was in different sizes so that it could be served on websites more easily.
So talk us through that. So when you started moving more to the SEO side of things, the marketing side of things, what was that company? What was your first role? Yeah, talk us a bit through that.
Yeah, so it was NextNet Media about 10 years ago. So what happened was I was working on their web hosting side of the business, and we had old websites from like 2007. And we really needed to do some major updates. So I just raised my head and said, hey, I'll knock it out. I'll get it connected up with WHMCS. I'll make sure we're in good shape. And it really was just learning everything I possibly could, watching what Google was doing. I took something that was built in an old PHP language and then popped it into WordPress. Understanding 301 redirects, understanding back then how to get an SSL certificate. I think it's something we still take massive advantage of now, not understanding all how like weeks, it used to take weeks to get this stuff done. Being able to do that, then tracking 301 redirects, tracking how the rankings happened over time, making sure that we had an appropriate amount of content that was on there. Obviously, content wasn't what it is now, but you still needed to have keywords show up on your website, making sure that things were working properly. It's the beginning inception of security in browsers and cross-site scripting and making sure that we were blocking things like that. I mean, it was sort of an all-encompassing area. And as I sort of continued on with my career, that has sort of been what I focused in on. I went and worked for Deluxe for a while. They're the Czech company, but they had a small business services, and I was MacGyver. They would send me into another brand. My job was to take every single thing that they had in website, system A, and then pop it into WordPress, make sure that All the redirects were in place. All of the cross-site scripting. I had to work a ton with security on that side of the equation. And just learning more and more and more about each and every little change, and then being able to track how it impacted things moving forward. So for example, we bought a payroll company based out of Baltimore. And when I moved everything from their old WordPress build into a new WordPress build, how did the HTML impact their rankings? How did the HTML impact the rankings? How did it impact the use of the form when people ended up on the website using systems like Hotjar, finding out each and every place, like conversion rate optimization became a big piece of the puzzle for me. Then going back and updating other web hosting brands that we were acquiring. How could I make something pop for someone? You know, so the first problem was, how do I get them to land on the website in the first place? And then how do I work in conversion rate optimization into the game? Then using Google Analytics, finding out what's the entry point, what's the next page they go to, and what's their exit point? What am I looking for? How am I tracking all of this? So just sort of became this entire, you know, toolbox of things that were at my disposal now that I needed to get to know at a very intimate level to understand how do they all feed into each other so I can get what I need, which is the person to buy hosting from me, right? How can I follow through each and every piece of that? Not only that, but it informed how we were talking about things holistically as an organization. If we're talking about web hosting, our website says one thing, our customer service needs to be saying the same thing when they're working through that and looking and tying everything holistically together. That sort of informed a lot more of what I was doing. And at the time I was working with brands like 180 Fusion, which turned into Deluxe Marketing Services, Vertical Response, which is an email marketing platform that Deluxe used to own that is now owned by another group, working with payroll companies based out of Canada, based in the United States, web hosting companies like Mac Highway, Manage.com, which has one of the best names of all time, Colo Crossing, which completely bucked the trend for us and was also part of the acquisition teams that acquired 70% of the web hosting market in Australia, was trying to find out how each and every one of these groups could work together, but doing it all through the idea of SEO. So what we were able to do was we could see all the things we did in the past for our US brands and then do a lot of them SEO-wise over in with Digital Pacific. Same thing. Panther.com.au is another one that we had acquired. There was so much information that they had done almost to the same level as Media Temple before GoDaddy had acquired them. Taking a lot of their key learnings and how much content they had created, we took that same methodology, moved over to Mac Highway, and then all of a sudden we're ranking for a bunch of, you know, knowledge base articles that talk about how to update your website, or I'm sorry, how to update your iPhone to now get your email from your Mac Highway account. And all of a sudden it created this huge, you know, cycle of customers coming through looking for one very specific thing, being given an offer that made sense for them to move their web hosting over to our brand, and then, you know, rinse and repeat. And it was a great system.
Very cool. Obviously, you piqued my interest there with the Australian taking that market. What year was that around? What was that? And what was the, who was it you took over? Because it's ringing a bell with me very clearly.
Yeah. So it was around 2017, 2018, Digital Pacific, Panther, Anchor, Web24 was another one.
Okay.
And then a bunch of subsidiaries of that.
Got you. I do remember seeing that on my LinkedIn feed. Okay, cool. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
So then talk me through, really heavy tech background, but from at what point did you really start to see, okay, well, the application of what I understand to getting these sites crawled, indexed, and ranked? Like, was there a specific story early on where you're like, oh, wow, look what I've done, look what's happening, look what Google's doing, what I've been able to achieve?
Yeah, I think the easy one, I think for most people, Penguin is probably the one where they saw what such a big shakeup was and then how it influenced what they did. Mine was actually 2014 with the big first pushes into HTTPS and SSL. As they started to sort of push those more and more, that's when I realized so much of the internet was not using an SSL certificate. And as Google started to sort of pick them off, I was able to create content that was able to take over for those spaces. So for example, when I worked in web hosting, obviously a lot of web hosting companies already had SSLs, right? They had the technology at their disposal, but there were a lot of tech channels that did not. So we were able to actually use similar methodology to like Skyscraper content, rewrite a lot of those articles, but because we were secured, we were able to go in and basically take over a lot of rankings for things like that.
Wow.
It helped us gain a lot more attention. And then not only just for the rankings, but doing more interviews, talking about our brand and what we were able to bring to the table.
Very cool.
So that was one of the major ones for us.
In terms of like the writing, we're going to talk a bit about, you know, the application of AI, generative AI, and those sorts of things for this SEO space. Was that all manual back then, or were we talking programmatic, or what was the application to generating that content back then?
A lot of that content was generated by me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And a lot of it was by hand.
Yep.
When we looked at things that Panther had done, then it became a little bit more programmatic just because we already had a template to work from. And then I would go and hire a bunch of writers and, you know, have them create 15 separate flavors of the same article. And then just chat, sort of like a early version of what we call topical authority now.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to sort of do very much the same thing, but a lot of the writing came from me.
So let's talk about NextNet Media just briefly in terms of like some of the brands that people might know if they don't know of NextNet Media. Like what are some of the brands within the big house of NextNet?
Yeah. So NextNet Media were comprised of The Hoth, Authority Builders, LinkBuilder.io, SEO Jet, and FreeUp.net is another one. So Basically what we have is a bunch of SEO companies that can handle, you know, companies at different stages of, you know, their life. So SEO Jet is a great entry level point. We've got a great SaaS system that allows you, you know, to enter in your information. Our system would automatically tell you what your anchor text breakdown should look like, the types of targets or pages that you wish to target, and make it super easy for you just to like click and find the sites that make the most amount of sense. With The Hoth, more SMBs, you know, kind of come through. We have a lot more handholding when it comes to educating you about what it is we're going to be doing. Our managed product is, you know, phenomenal. We can handle anything all the way from content creation all the way to link building. We also have a technical SEO product that can help break down what some of the challenges might be with your website. For authority builders, we have a very different link building philosophy than a lot of other sites out there. We really do focus on niche relevancy and making sure that we're getting you the best sites. So many of our clients are actually agency-based. And what we do is we actually work and find out what exactly it is that they're looking to do for those exact pages. And we'll run a very bespoke link gap analysis against your your competitors to make sure that we're getting the most relevant links for you. On top of that, our QA vetting process for authority builders is very, very specific and very, very arduous. We make sure that all of the links that we use and all of the publishing partners that we have really are on their best behavior, on their A game, and we're not using anything. I'm crazy with data, so I've got spreadsheets coming out of every orifice that talk about, what's the turnaround time? What's the indexing? How does this look? Anchor text, what's the breakdown? All of these different things. And then linkbuilder.io is honestly, they're working with massive companies that are ordering, $100,000, $120,000 worth of products every single month. And it really comes down to being at that higher end echelon, making sure that the product that you get is only going to be the best thing for your brand, and that it's actually entering into more of a conversation. So when we're doing this, it actually ends up looking a whole lot more like digital PR, where we're able, through our relationships, to earn links that you may not get any other way. You may have thought about ways to do this in the past with utilizing, something like Help a Reporter Out, where it's, publications that you've never heard of before, but it's become so sort of overused at this point that mostly anybody can sort of enter it. But we still have a good group of sites that only we have a relationship with. And then with FreeUp, it's like similar to Upwork or Fiverr, but instead of, entering in, let's say, a job ticket request on Upwork of I need a web developer and getting 120 applications and having to sift through all that nonsense, we actually send you between 5 and 7 pre-vetted people that actually can speak directly to you about what your project needs to get done. And they will give you, everything that you need to know right then and there. But it goes from being a part-time job over a month period for you to, wax through everybody else, all of a sudden meeting 5 to 7 people that you can make a determination with very, very quickly. And we specialize a lot more in e-commerce. So Amazon, that area, Shopify. So
got it.
And that's encompasses pretty much all of them. Yeah, we've got developers, we've got customer service people, regular virtual assistants that can handle graphic design all the way designing an entire application. Panacea.
Okay. So yeah, the topic we're going to talk about today is just about an AI application in the space of SEO. I'd love to get your thoughts firstly on, how you've been using AI within your work at NextNet. So like, when did that first get on your roadmap? When did you start applying it? Because obviously a lot of the world is kind of just catching up, generative AI with ChatGPT has got a lot of people thinking they should be applying it and not really having, not really necessarily having robust systems around using it effectively and efficiently. But when did it first get into your purview?
So really one of the areas it first got into our purview was probably about 2.5 years ago. I can actually tell you my CTO was in town. We had just finished up dinner and we're walking back to the office and he said, "Hey, did you get an invite to OpenAI yet?" I was like, "Oh, I haven't checked my email today." And he's like, "Ah." So we literally spent almost the entire night in the office just playing around with OpenAI and just asking it questions. At the time, it was very, very, bottom basement what the answers were. We were using it to create movie scripts for Ghostbusters 3 and stuff like that. I mean, it was just all of the nerd stuff that we just enjoyed. Probably the following months after that was, okay, let's take it seriously. How do we think we would be able to utilize this? Several months after that, we actually made an acquisition of an AI company.
Okay.
Copymatic.ai is the internal AI company that we own. With that, we came this great founder named Ryan Faber. He sort of joined our organization and he was able to go through and look and find out what people were doing with AI. How is it actually piquing their interest? What made them want to do it? And what were they creating with it? So the great thing about that acquisition was we were actually able, so there's 84 tools inside of it. We could tell you what people were using. We were seeing signals that you would have never gotten any other way. If we had just created a content product, you would only see them using the content product, nothing else. So we have a landing page builder. It's able to write, little blurbs about Amazon. Like if you wanted to do an Amazon listing or you wanted to transcribe YouTube, you wanted to create notes, you wanted to do all of these different things, we could actually see in real time what people were using it for. Right around early last year, everybody started to sort of say, oh, we know that AI is being used for content creation. And on some levels we had started using it, but we still weren't huge adopters of it yet. And I'll kind of explain why. So early last year, originality.ai started to pop up onto the scene. Everybody was talking about, well, how do we detect AI? How do we, combat it? Google says it's against their terms of service. We don't really want to do anything that Google doesn't like. And really it kind of threw everybody into a tizzy. So with multiple different large systems that were being used at the time, like Hugging Face and originality.ai, the entire conversation was, as soon as I can detect that any AI was being used, we're gonna pass it back. And so with our regular content products that were not using AI, we were getting it kicked back to us. And customers were saying, you're using AI for this. I'm like, I can tell you definitively we're not. The way that our systems are set up, we're able to track and detect. What we found out was Hugging Face and originality.ai were not the only players in the game. There were so many different systems that were being used. And you have to remember, it's being trained on the content that had been created for years and years and years and years and years. And so much content for so many years is like second, third grade level. So the patterns of what is going to be detected as the next word was super easy to follow. And so regularly written things, it really wasn't until Google came out, I think it was like February 8th of last year, and said, this isn't a violation of our terms of service. if you have bad content, we are not going to value that bad content. If it's written by AI or it's written by a human, it doesn't matter. It's bad content. We're only going to value things that are higher level content. The thing is, right after that was said, Hugging Face and Originality.ai took a big hit. Now, I happen to know the Originality.ai founder. Great guy, has so many great ideas about how to continue to track this in the future. I still run into clients who really don't want to use AI. AI at our level is almost ubiquitous. But if you talk to SMBs or people that are looking to start up a brand new business, they don't really have enough knowledge to really have an opinion about whether or not AI should be used or not. What I look at AI is one of the things that I think it does the best is research. Now, you can say, I'm going to pop something in Open or ChatGPT, and it's going to have a hallucination and tell me that flying cars were invented in 1972. Absolutely right. I actually think that the problem with AI is a lack of media literacy and people being able to understand, how do I get information? How do I synthesize it to tell whether or not this is a very helpful piece of information that's out there? And there's actually other things you can do. So if you look at Claude, you look at Gemini, you look at ChatGPT, they're constantly refining the way that they do things so that they can actually fact check on their own. Like Gemini does a really, really great job of fact checking its own information before it serves it back to you. My daughter, she loves to play with Gemini because she can make pictures of unicorns doing stuff and things like that. I just asked it a question, can you give me the history of unicorns? And what I loved most about it was if I had asked that question to ChatGPT, let's say 5 months prior, it would just make something up. I mean, I would never be able to know where it's coming from, but Gemini gave me the history of that and then it cited its source and it told me, and then I could click on it and go to the Wikipedia article that would give me the entire breakdown of the history of, you know, the magical realism that is unicorns and all the rest of it. And whereas this is like a very, very funny topic, you can use this for literally anything. Talk about the history of Porsches, talk about, you know, how the pier in St. Pete got built and all the different iterations. I mean, it cites its sources. And I liken this very similar to, you know, Wikipedia. When Wikipedia came on the scene, I was, you know, in my later years of college, and Wikipedia was like the worst place for you to go to find information. If you cited it as a source, your professor just basically ripped up your paper in front of you and said you were a joker in using it. It wasn't until they started to better cite their sources were you able to even start at Wikipedia. And I think we're going to see a very similar thing here, which is when Claude, ChatGPT, Gemini, and any other model that comes out in the future, when they focus on citing their sources, the trust factor is going to go up immensely. And that trust factor will not only translate into the research that people do using it, but then also the content that comes out of it, right? I can ask ChatGPT a question today about how to migrate a VPS to a dedicated server, and it will give me really, really good information. That will take about 30 minutes for me to receive and then kind of comb through and make sure that there aren't any weird, you know, affectations in the text. 5 years ago, when I wrote that same article for Mac Highway, it took me about a month.
This is the thing, like I think like with the right inputs and with a better expectation of what it's going to provide, like the way I can fast track and make this more efficient is like undeniable. So, and I think also you touched on something there, which is interesting around, you know, potentially, let's just say enterprise brands with a very clear tone of voice, you know, a very specific way they need their copy and their messaging packaged on their site. Great, understood. You're not just going to punch it into ChatGPT and pop it on your site. Mm-hmm. You know, you might start there and have it accelerate your writers to get where you need to go, but it's just not going to happen. SMBs, okay, well, you know, that might be enough to just get, you know, get content on your site. But I think like it's about the outcome it's about the outcome more so than the method of getting there. And I liken this to when it wasn't that long ago that most agencies would be like, you know, we do everything 100% onshore, in-house. You know, that's why you know it's quality. But then clients started going, I don't care where you do it. I just want it to be great. You know, I couldn't care less where it's getting done as long as you're treating people well and we get really good work. So I think this is, you know, a similar thing that, you know, that backlash against, and you've touched on it then. I mean, it should get better over time as it evolves. You know, Google's past the point of saying that they're not going to index or rank AI generated copy. So why would anyone feel that that's a barrier? It's just, we just need to look at it more as a tool than a replacement. I think it's kind of what I'm getting at. And it's a tool which is evolving really fast.
No, I fully agree with you. I think as a tool, it's probably one of the most important pieces that's out there. Where I think AI conversation sort of sits right now is the people who are like, this is the future and the only future, and you either are behind it 100% or you're not, and the people who are just like, I'm never going to touch it. And I think you really do have to thread that needle of understanding how it's going to help you in your day-to-day, but also just recognizing it's only a tool, right? Again, I can come up with the craziest prompt under the sun and have it create something that's 99% there. I could post that 99% there article 100 times. There's going to be that one time that I post that article and it's just not enough and it's going to turn somebody off to that page. So I have to be able to give that level of attention for each and every one of those articles. I think that's the piece that most people are missing. Similar to the other side, if I say that only use my in-house team to write every single thing out there under the sun, I'm giving too much ownership to them to create that because I could still do the same thing. I post it 100 times and they're 99% there. And it's just that one time it misses. It's just how much time are you willing to put into it to get the output that you require? And I think it's a really, really important seminal area that we're in right now where we're looking at it only as a tool. You know, again, if we see it as the thing that's going to destroy, you know, economies or grow this side of the economy and doing all that, we're missing the part where the end customer, the end business owner, probably couldn't tell you anything about it. You know, I have two anecdotal stories. My sister-in-law has a website that I'm helping her with. I have a friend from college that, you know, she has a website she's working with. Both of my conversations with them about utilizing AI to help create some content for them go exactly the same way. I've never used it before. How can I get started?
Totally.
Yeah, that's it. They don't know about it. They don't know anything about it. The only thing they hear about it is the doom and gloom on podcast A, or this is the magic bullet that's going to save everybody's woes. And they just need to know where to get started. How do I ask it questions? How am I going to vet it? The challenge that I think is going to exist the most for something like OpenAI is they go through so many different iterations so quickly that for 90% of the population, they won't try something a second time. My team and I, we have that stick-to-itiveness where we're going to test it multiple times to find out how it gets better over time. How can we make those updates to have it get better and better and better? And I think it's that level of scrutiny that everybody should be coming into it with. Maybe it's not fitting the bill today, but don't get left in the dust because you don't think it has any value moving forward.
For sure.
One last piece I want to talk on with AI before we get into our Vox Pop is around search generative experience or experiences. Do you have a take on it? Do you think Google's going to pull the trigger at any time soon? Do you think it's the sky is falling, or, you know, what's your take on SGE?
So SGE, right now, this is where my nerd brain comes out,
yeah,
is I have spreadsheets after spreadsheet after spreadsheet where I'm tracking everything. I have a team of people from all around the world, and their job is like once a week to search very specific keywords, and we look at what is in SGE. So as an example, let's say that I want to learn more about wakeboarding, right? What is wakeboarding? That's the key phrase that will go in there, and we'll look at the entire SGE breakdown of where is the PPC, where are those ads in, and then what are all of the reference points that are in the article. So for each and every time you use it, you'll see, okay, for instance, you know, Article 1, 2, 3, and 4, right? But 1, 2, 3, and 4 do not correspond with the top four searches for that thing. So now why is the reason for that is there's obviously context that comes into it. That Google is trying to assess intent. Why is it you're searching? What are you trying to do? For Google, the intent of pretty much anything that you're ever doing is you want to buy something. So it's always going to serve me, where can I buy my first wakeboard? But how does it fall in there? And then how does that change over time? What I want to get to is I want to get to a place where I can understand each and every one of those changes. Why are those sites being picked versus other ones for that content? The other thing to look out for, and I think it was Search Engine Roundtable had an article about this that talked about how with SGE, different sectors are picked up to have that as the default experience versus others. So for like healthcare, something more general, SGE is probably used at a higher clip than something like, let's say, taxes. You know, when you're asking a question about where can I get my taxes done or something like that. I think that evolution over time is where I think Google's going to probably learn the most about trying to assess what the intent is. Because they want to be the ones that are building the best system because it's the one that can cause them the most disruption, but they can actually do more harm than good. Because if everybody stops using Google because they automatically default to SGE, Google is not being communicated with the same way, so they run a big risk. If you go to OpenAI, well, at least how I use OpenAI is I say, hey, I want you to act as though you're my CTO, and I need some help being able to crum up with some queries that I can use in Google Sheets to create, you know, this new type of pivot table that I need. When I go to Google, I'm like, pivot table, you know, Google Sheets, like it's very bare bones. The communication styling is very, very different. So Google knows that, and they're trying to assess intent with less information that's in. But if they continue down the rabbit hole they're going through right now, I think that they're going to end up with a lot more problems, which is if I rank in the top 10 for a topic and you never, ever show my link to anybody, I'm probably not going to spend that much time thinking about you any longer. I'm going to try to figure out other ways how I can be more attractive to OpenAI, Claude, even if I want to show up in Arc browser, you know, something to that effect. They run the risk of turning too many people off if they open this up to too many people at the same time. So I really do believe that they're going to have to hone in on search intent a whole lot better before they open this up to everybody else.
That's a very reasonable call. And what we haven't touched on, the elephant in the room, is the ad revenue. Like how much of the setup is getting taken up by SGE? How much does that impact? I'm sure they've got spreadsheets at their end talking about the impact on ad revenue for top funnel queries that are getting served. And I get that there's also the flip side to that would be some kind of algorithm which talks about, well, the longer people are on the SERP, the more likely they are to spend. So it's not always, you know, straight transactional, every SERP needing a, you know, some kind of transaction coming from it. But, you know, if Eli Schwartz, who's been on this podcast a few times, talks about, you know, potentially 50% of all traffic, top funnel traffic, you know, going away if SGE is implemented as it currently looks. We're still in beta, obviously. You know, these are things that much more clever people than myself, probably not you, you know, are trying to work out to figure out the business math to try to get ahead of, like you say, like to build a product that is a world-leading product at the same time as not cutting themselves off the knees financially.
Yeah. You look at just the SERP, pickleball paddles. 6 months ago, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, pickleball paddles, you'd end up with a bunch of forums or blog posts that talked about the best pickleball paddles you can purchase. Why you should look at the top five pickleball paddles. If you search that now, it's all buy now. You can buy directly in there. They're actually sorting it by that because they're assessing that intent of what people are using it for. I think those signals probably tell us more about where SGE comes into play than how SGE is being used, because what ends up happening more often than anything else is the person who's searching for it is so impressionable by anything that if you try to give or presume their intent, you're just going to go with it because, well, I really wasn't positive what I was looking for. I think Google really needs to find a way of being able to train people to talk to Google more and like have it be an interactive experience. I use Gemini more than I do Google right now, regular Google search, because I can put all of my intent in there. It actually does a really great job, whereas using google.com isn't giving me what I want.
That is
I only use it to like remind me of a place I knew that I already wanted to go.
That is such an interesting take, one that I haven't heard before, of the SGE application, of being a way to help train Google with its own commercial ability, you know, more contextual, people are giving him more information. What are you actually looking for here? Great. Let's make the SERP. Let's make the ads more relevant based on the intent signals we're getting, because you're giving it so much more information over here because you do communicate differently here. There you go. There's a long game, which I hadn't considered.
Yeah. So there's so many signals that you can look at.
Great. Awesome, Matt. Well, thank you. Yeah, really fun conversation just on your own history, getting into AI and generative AI and SG and everything that's happening in that space. It's been the biggest topic on this podcast for fully a year now. And it just keeps evolving. You know, it keeps on changing. We're recording this now in March 2024. You know, who knows how this sounds in 6 months or a year's time, but a couple of very interesting takes you've mentioned there that I had not heard before, and I'll be watching much more closely. So thank you.
Yeah, anytime.
Cool. Now we are going to get into our quickfire Vox Pop. So I'm going to run a few questions by you that I run past every guest. You ready?
Yep, go for it.
Which previous Google algo change still keeps you up at night?
BERT. I think BERT is probably one of the ones that when NLP sort of came into the mix, nobody really understood what it meant, and everybody was trying to figure out why things happened. When it had to do with HTTPS, it was a clear binary. I don't have this. I need to get this. With NLP, it was just everybody, so much content had to be rewritten.
What's your favorite non-obvious software tool that you use every day to research or execute?
I've got two, if that's okay.
Go for it.
The first one is going to be producthunt.com.
Mm-hmm.
As a place to go and research and find out what other people are building, it is phenomenal. It has helped in a myriad of ways of finding tools that nobody else could even possibly figure out. And then this other one, I just found a couple of weeks ago. It is called explore.globe.engineer.
Okay.
It uses AI to scrape the internet, already pre-scraped, and gives you all of these different graphical content that exists out there. So for example, if you used it and you searched up, you went and did a search of product manager checklists, it's going to give you all of these different types of checklists that you can be using for all of these different types of things, and you can interact with them and change what your search is. So for example, I'm on there right now. It's saying coordinate with customer support for feedback. I can click on that, and then it will all of a sudden open that up with a huge amount of other information you can dive into. It has, honestly, I've been using it for like 2 weeks. It's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Wow, very cool. A gun to your head, which do you prefer, content or links?
Links.
Is the skyscraper technique still relevant today?
Yes, but in name only. I think as a discipline of creating content that your competitors are already ranking for and making better than theirs is already what you should be doing. The discipline of following up and trying to make sure that the relevant entities are seeing it at the same time, that's what makes it still relevant today.
Got it. What do you love most about SEO?
Again, a nerd with spreadsheets, finding that little nugget, that's my favorite thing. Like, I can find that and I'll just go run to my CFO's office and I'll be like, I did it. I just cracked the code. And then those little aha moments of finding something that no one else has, that's what I love more than anything else.
Got it. That probably rolls a bit into the next one. How do you apply SEO principles to your daily life?
It's all about data. Use very much the same thing, just the signals that are out there. I spend about 50% of my day just digging through database tables, trying to find something, just even in our own company, no one else has been tracking, to give me a little bit of insight into what that little tweak I can make, and then how can I track? So in SEO, very, very similar. If I'm looking at all of our properties, and let's go with bounce rate, what's the number one thing that I can change? And then how am I going to determine what that change needs to be? How am I going to make that change? And then how am I going to track it long term? So another cool little tool that's out there, I know that people don't like Bing that much, but with Bing Webmaster Tools, they actually give you a heat map tool in there for free. So for one of my brands, for SEO Jet, I actually have that turned on. And I found out that if I moved the call to action button, like I think it was like another 300 pixels up, I had a potential of converting a whole lot better. I moved it up. I was able to see that our bounce rate, you know, did a whole lot better. And that our revenue went up by like 5%.
Very cool.
It seemed like a huge amount, but a good way of using tiny little tools to make things better.
What's your preference? Work from home life, office life, or hybrid life?
I love my office. So I'm going to go with office life, but when we did work from home, you know, having two kids made it super challenging, just not being able to get away. But I love my office.
SEMrush or Ahrefs? You have to choose one.
Ahrefs.
Last one, for brands, what do you think is the best mix for them, for their SEO? Using an agency, using an in-house team, or using a combination of both?
I think a combination gives you the best chance of success. I think one of the things that you run the risk of with working in only one facet or the other is your lack of education on what that subject may be, or only paying attention to certain signals. So I've worked with agencies where they can come in and steamroll you and tell you this is what you need to be focusing in on, and you have no checks and balances over them. And then 12 months down the road, there's no alignment on what the success should have been. Working solely in-house, very, very similar. I can have thoughts and ideas about how we tackle a problem, but I'm not entering in what other people may think are very trackable things and then finding a way of being able to show off that success. So I think a combo is your best bet. Once you get to a certain size, then in-house, I think, makes some more sense.
Great. Love it. Checks and balances. Makes sense. Matt, thank you so much. Great conversation. A lot of unique takes I haven't heard before. So really good to get a feel for your history, your thoughts on SEO today, the biggest challenges on where this whole AI wave is at now and where it's taking us. What's the best way people, if they want to reach out, if they've got any specific questions for you, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Best way is probably going to be my LinkedIn. Send that over to you. I am not cool enough to be without numbers in my link. So LinkedIn's probably the best bet, or matt@nextnetmedia.com.
Okay.
You can always reach me there.
Beautiful. Awesome, Matt. That was Matt from NextNet Media. Really great conversation. If you have enjoyed this, we'll be back again in your ears in 2 weeks' time with another SEO success story. Please do jump on, write us a review, tell your friends, hit that subscribe button. This is Russ McCumber, another episode of SEO Success for all you SEO nerds. Cheers.